Tonight, it's my great pleasure to welcome Sahaj for the first time to Many Rivers Books and Tea. Sahaj received his master's degree in transpersonal counseling psychology in 2001, has spent 7 years in social work and attending satsangs with Adyashanti. In 2009, he began meditating 8 hours a day, and I think I'll let him tell the rest. But we are delighted to have him here for Satsang, Awakening to the Source. Welcome.
Well, thank you. And I thought we'd just take a few minutes to sit silently. Buddha was asked, "Who are you? Are you a god?" "No." "Then are you a man?" "No." "What are you?" And he replied, "I am awake." Awake has nothing to do with your thoughts, your beliefs, your creed, your religion. And yet all of that is awake. Each one of you, right now, is totally awake. The sensory input, when you see something, the awakeness of what you see, when you feel the very textures, the awakeness of what you touch, what you hear, the very sensory input of even the discomfort, even the irritations. We try to get away from discomfort, move towards what feels better. Each and everything. Everything is this awakeness. Where are you to go? Where? What are you to seek? What are you to run away from? Watch yourself move. Watch the dance of this life. Awake, awake, awake. It's all awake, right now, right here. So this is the, what I call the more receptive aspect. There is what I call a more active aspect as well. Fire, fire of awakening. It can involve intense kundalini. It can involve facing your deepest terrors. The intensity of everything is quadrupled in awakening. Awakening is catalyst of love, So if we're all here and awake and nothing to do and nowhere to go, then what is this movement? What is the fire of awakening? What is this? Ramana mentioned, it's a funny thing that being the self, here we all are, seeking the self. Ironic. This whole movement results in a wider and wider embrace, larger and larger embrace, instead of self-centeredness. You embrace all selves as the self.
In awakeness.
What's that?
In awakeness.
It's all awake, yeah.
So, okay.
And also in love. We're all awake right here, right now. And yet thoughts come up that are attentive to individual self. Thoughts and feelings arise. They have a hard time stretching out, reaching out to others sometimes. These thoughts, these feelings are very much awake. The essential nature is awake. What it's made out of is awakeness. Thoughts and feelings come and go. Everything comes and goes. Yet the awakeness, this empty awakeness that's always here, never comes, never goes, shines through it all. Shines through everything. So the movement happens in a larger, larger embrace of love. More and more open heart. And paradoxically, the more evolved you are in love, the deeper you rest in pure awareness. Some aspects of the movement of love can be bliss, shakti, the potency and aliveness of life. The feelings that we have in our hands, in our bodies. Bliss. When this bliss can actually be known above the top of the head, it cracks us. It can crack us. And crack us open to the source. How do we all know this bliss? We know it in our desires. So this larger and larger embrace is a wider and more open desire. Papaji said, the fire of awakening burns all of yourself up. And at some point, gotta let go of that too. You can give everything to the energy of desire. Pure, pure desire with no object, just the energy of desire. Take all of your desires for all of your life, everything you want, think you want, sexual desire, your desires for love, your desires for money, desires for things in life. Take that essential desire and be in it fully. As it purifies, it takes you through this wider and wider embrace.
How does it purify?
As you give more and more of yourself to this, as you surrender more and more deeply, you're left with less attention on the I, on this individual body identification. As that I slips away, dissolves, you come to know yourself, which is that which has never been born, never died. Pure awareness, always right here. Pure peace. Love is a transformational energy that brings you into a deeper and deeper resting place in this pure peace.
I'm still confused about the desire.
What do you desire?
And so you suggested being in them, just me.
So what is your image or feeling of the highest truth?
That question feels too abstract for me to answer.
Do you believe in God or Buddhism, true nature?
Not really.
Why are you here? What is the desire that brought you here?
Yeah, so I do believe that there is such a thing as awakening.
So
I wish to explore that, so
beautiful.
We could see that.
So if you take your desire for awakening and surrender everything else, every last little piece of desire that's running rampant in every other direction, purely focused on this one desire for awakening, earnestness, total sincerity, surrender of absolutely every other part of yourself to this. That's the purification of desire. And of course, eventually that desire for awakening is let go of too. But that one fire, that one pointedness helps. That one pointedness is the key. We all have desires. You can't get away from it. Even the Buddha, they say he gave up all his desires to go for awakening. Isn't that a desire too? To go for awakening. So that purification, the years that he spent in renunciation, meditation, that was the fire. Burned up everything else. And then he almost got washed away in a river because he was starving to death. And he realized, I'm not getting anywhere by starving myself to death. So he gave up his renunciation, went and sat down under a tree and had a meal for the first time in a long time. And he sat there for a while and all desires left. Or the identification with all desires left. Desire can still come and go, even after awakening. But they come and go within the vastness of what you are. There is no longer you grasping, trying, struggling, stressed out, in distress.
Non-attachment. It's not getting attached to any thing.
The only way to non-attachment is through attachment. Have you ever noticed when you try to push something away in your mind and it keeps coming back? Don't think about monkeys, and all you can think about is monkeys. To go through it with consciousness, with awakeness. You can sit here. You don't have to physically act it out. You can just sit. And when the grasping arises in your mind, feel it, allow it. It's here. Don't push it away. You don't need to go out and act it out in the world. Deeply, deeply feel is the only way through. Non-attachment is a word sometimes that implies pushing away. It doesn't have to, but a word I like more is non-identification. And the mind would love to say, well, oh, I'd love the peace of non-identification. I would love that. Where can I get it? See, the mind is a resistance to what is. Or a part of our mind is a resistance to what is, that egoic, stressed out part that's in suffering, the resistance to what is. And so it's already pushing away. It's already not embracing, not accepting. When something in life happens and there's a feeling that might be uncomfortable, often we skip over it, go up to the head, round and around and around and around. And that around and around tail chasing is that lovely refusal to just feel. Not so lovely, actually. So when the mind begins to collapse, you actually find yourself feeling more deeply. All your fears, all your terrors, all your love, all your joys. Detached intimacy is unconditional love. How can you unconditionally love if you're attached? Attached with blinders is conditional. Detached is unconditional. Yet it's not a detached where you're pushing everything away. It's a detached where you have the total freedom to be right here in the midst of it all, completely intimate. Completely close, completely feeling it all, letting your heart break. Letting your heart be joy, bliss, pure awareness.
Wishing for desire without identification doesn't make it so, in my experience. How did that become possible for you?
Wishing for desire for non-identification?
Without identification, you were speaking of that.
Right.
Desire that you're accepting and not identified with. You're not feeding it necessarily, but not you're not it. It isn't you, you're not identified. That sounds good. So, how did you achieve that, or did you achieve that?
There was an awakening to the source. And that's only half the story. because people can stay at the source for years. Nirvikalpa samadhi, you know, you're just blissed out in total emptiness and meditation. Completely dysfunctional to the world, but you're happy. So then coming back into the world, not afraid, or even if you are afraid, not afraid to be afraid. Completely opening yourself to life, letting it all right back in. So yes, the emptiness is beautiful and peaceful. And awakening many times takes one directly to the source, to that emptiness, to that intelligence. And sometimes an attachment to that forms in the mind, because the mind hasn't been completely dissolved. We have a whole relationship with life that has been developing. It's our conditioning since we were born, or if you believe in past lives. All this conditioning also needs to be seen through. And it can't be seen through as long as we stay in the peace and the bliss of the emptiness. So when you have awakened to what you are, if you really want to purge your suffering, you must come back into everything that you're afraid of, into life, everything that irritates you, everything that you might have aversions to. You must face all your attachments, you must face all your desires. When it came to the desires, it felt like there was a choice sometimes, and the choice was to pursue this thing out in the world, or to choose blissful emptiness. And so there was a choice that kept choosing blissful emptiness. And it didn't mean that I stayed there all day, every day. At this point, it was just a choice. After the choice, the attachment fell away.
Thank you, but I didn't understand that last.
So, give me a desire. An attachment, something that maybe you've been struggling with.
The desire to just kick back and relax whenever I want to, and not have to attend to anything.
It also sounds like there's aversion to the attending of anything.
Sometimes.
But you feel the attachment to kicking back more than the aversion to the things.
Not necessarily, it's just something that comes and goes.
Mm-hmm. So to face what maybe you're not feeling, what do you think you're not feeling?
I don't have any ideas about it.
So there you are. Let's say in the moment that you have an opportunity to go out and do something. And you're like, no, nope, I want to stay here and kick back. What's that feeling?
It can be a number. It can have a number of ways of manifesting.
Such as?
Rationalizations, for instance.
So that's the skipping over I was talking about. Rationalizations are when we skip over the feeling into the mind, and it does its little circle dance.
Okay.
So before the rationalizations, there was something else that arose for you.
Maybe fatigue.
Yeah.
Or just habit energy.
Yeah.
Wanting to do what I want to do when I want to do it.
Yeah.
That's more likely than fatigue.
Yeah.
That looks. If the habit energy is a feeling, then. Okay. So,
So habits drop away the more deeply you rest right here, right now.
Pardon?
The more deeply that you rest right now, right here, and not just kicking back.
I got you.
Right. But actually being right here, right now, and listening. This quality of listening, what wants to happen? And if there's something that needs attending to, see what happens. I challenge you to go and take care of what needs attention and feel your feelings as you do that. Feel your feelings as you move away from the kicking back and you attend to what you need to attend to.
Okay. Gotcha.
Deeply feel. Because that's what all the mind, all the rationalizations, even the habits, are a defense against the moment. They're a defense against being mindful. Are you familiar with Vipassana retreats?
Yes.
10 days of just sitting there being mindful. So it's the medicine for the habitual entrenchment that we ordinarily go through. Mindfulness. In whatever you do, mindfulness. You don't have to meditate. You don't have to do anything other than what you're doing, other than what's coming through you. Simply be mindful. Simply pay attention to your body. What energies are you feeling? What feelings are arising as you're moving through each moment of life? If an aversion or a discomfort to something arises, don't move away from it. Just keep feeling it. Stay right with it. Stay right there, touching it. My sense is that it's less of an attachment to kicking back and more of an aversion to something about life, like your relationship with life.
You're talking about something, you're talking actually, you said it's not meditation, but mindfulness is meditation.
I meant to
apply.
Right.
It's not sitting on a cushion meditation,
right.
But it is meditation, definitely. It's not something, one can't just be mindful by saying, I think I'll be mindful today. I've
yes.
decided to do that.
Yes.
You know, so And my question was about the means.
The how?
Yeah, the how. In your experience, I'm not talking about some universal how, but in your experience, what did you do?
From Adi Ashanti, I really got to not do anything when I sat. And so I just sat there. Mind would blah, 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 circle, 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 around and around and around. And a lot of traditions talk about all this really hard concentration and mental control, and you're not going to reach enlightenment if you don't control yourself. That wasn't my experience. My experience was I just let it do its thing. I let the animal chase its tail. And at one point, I took a jump, I took a leap of faith, I guess you might call it, into this. I used what little money I had instead of trying to create more security for myself, more job training. I used the money to finance myself while I was just sitting for months. And so this really was a deep shift right there in that decision. And so that shift to let go of the fear survival complex that keeps us spinning, it's spinning in fear, spinning in the hell realm, right here in our own consciousness. A choice to be unsafe, to be insecure, all in the name of discovering what is awakening. I wanted awakening. I had such a strong desire for it. I was willing to sacrifice my life, everything about me, my entire life, even to die at that moment, if that's what it truly meant. So just sitting. And I have some knowledge of Kundalini yoga, and so I ended up doing that as well, and integrating that with the sitting. And after a few months, the awakening began. And after that point, this increased consciousness, as I came back into deeply entrenched habits, started to wake up. You go back into, you don't run away from your deeply entrenched habits. You allow yourself back into it with increased mindfulness.
Is there something in your life that pushed you into this need for awakening? Is there something, some trauma or something that just made you say, I can't do this anymore?
Well, meeting Adya, Adya Shanti, back in like 2001. At the time I met him, I was a social worker, completely stressed out, miserable. I didn't know any other way. I had fantasies, trying to get myself out of the stress and out of the misery. I went to this guy, and he's talking about getting out of your mind. And at that moment, nothing really resonated in my head. I was like, yeah, whatever. I left, and a couple weeks later, I went back. Interesting what he's saying. Something started to grab me. And then I had questions just starting to arise, and I went up and asked him, and something just started to shift. Something started to happen. And it was almost outside of any of my conscious mind. It was something that just started happening. And then I decided to go on my own, to Yosemite, and I backpacked for about a week. And every other day I would hike, and the days in between was just open. So I'd wake up and stand there at the door of my tent, no idea what to do next. Breakfast, okay, let's eat breakfast. So I ate breakfast. After breakfast, excuse me, your hand's right in line of fire. Thanks.
Yeah.
After breakfast, head on over to the river. Looking at the river for 10, 15 minutes. I have no idea what to do next. Just stand there. Well, maybe I'll sit down. Sit there for an hour, a couple hours. So it was a very free-flowing kind of thing that happened. There was no technique to it. It was just relaxation. Deep, deep, deep relaxation. Non-doing.
I find that it takes having to get out of sometimes your environment to like what you did to your family,
yeah,
by retreat. To be able to get other perspectives so you're not so embroiled in what's going on.
Yes.
And it's so important to take that space.
Yes. You're right. And one thing, a lot of people head out to the retreats, like the meditation retreats, and personally that never worked for me because they were so strict and getting up at 4 or 5 in the morning, and I'm just so tired falling asleep in meditation, Well, that didn't really help me relax. I kind of got more stressed. So there's something to this deep relaxation. Adya opened up a satsang once and said, here's the mind. Really tight fist. Here's awakening. So that was 2001. Started having visions of him in meditations and ended up having a few hours where the sense of I just completely dropped out. It was just pure awareness and the body was doing its thing. I was dancing around trees and being all joyful. but there was no I. The body was just doing it. Personality was having fun, but there was just this vast awareness. And it only lasted 3 hours or so, about 3 hours, and then I got locked back into the I, and then all the questions arose. God, what just happened? How do I get back there? What do I do? Oh, this sucks where I'm at now. God, I want to get back there. So in terms of one single incident, I wouldn't say trauma. I would say meeting a free being. And something happened. Something was ready to open. I tend to have a kind of obsessive personality anyways. So once that path started, I got obsessed with that path. And that's how the fire of awakening for me turned into a bonfire. Just absolutely surrendering everything else, every other aspect, everything else in my personality, surrendering it to this, only this. God, you are my life, my love, my breath, my sleep, everything. Nothing is done without you. Total devotion. Help this one wake up out of this identification. Something that came through for me was these five elements, and each one was a tool that came at a certain time. Earth, be still. Water, just feel. Fire of devotion. Wind, breathe. And the void of renunciation. And these are all tools. Use them when appropriate. Renunciation doesn't mean becoming a monk. That you have to become a monk. You can if you want to. But it's a tool. If you're watching too much TV and not being mindful enough of your present emotions, then you could say, hey, okay, I realize TV is distracting me from being right here, right now. Okay, I'm not going to watch TV anymore. At least for a couple of months. So that's what I mean by renunciation. This that's always here, brightly awake. Luminosity. Doesn't mean you always have to be seeing the sun. Brightly awake. Here we are, awake. As we surrender and surrender and surrender more and more deeply to this awakeness that everything is anyways, we know this awakeness even in dream time. Ramana mentioned he knew this awakeness even in deep sleep. Ultimately, there is no non-awake. Ultimately, there's only awakeness. Everything is this awakeness. That's all. Ultimately, on the absolute level. Even the feelings of discomfort, even the feelings of suffering, even the horror that we see in the world, the essentialness of it, the nature of everything is this awakeness. And within this, the dreams of life, this movement of life, can move in ignorant ways, or unawake ways.
So what would be the difference?
do you know you're behaving in awake or non-awake way?
You are awake.
So what's the difference between awake and ignorant?
Ignorance can be an unconsciousness or a lack of mindfulness to that which you are, the awakeness that which you are.
I don't understand
that. So let's say a fly lands on your head and you don't even realize what you're doing, and you go and you swat it away. And your hand moved and you had no intention to do that, it just happened. So you could say that that was ignorance. That was a habitual movement stemming from past conditioning. So mindfulness is within each moment and within each movement. Here's the fly landing on your head. Okay, I just want to move him away from my head, so I'm just going to wave my hand. You know, versus maybe sometimes there can be that intention to, oh, I'm going to kill that little, you know, get rid of that guy, he's just bugging me. But in the midst of this mindful awakeness, there begins this compassion. There begins a compassion for others too, knowing them as yourself. All others are this awakeness. So this movement of ignorance that is actually of the nature of awakeness happens without you necessarily doing it.
Me who?
Yes, me who, yes.
Yeah,
the sense of me doing is just a sense, it's a thought and a feeling. So what is your motivation for wanting to know the difference?
So that I could tell.
Why do you want to tell?
Because I think if you want to be awake, you have to move from somewhere to something, right?
Who's moving?
My personality. That wants to be awake, it says the I.
So you notice this desire that wants to move into a more awake place? Is that true? So this desire is necessary. God responds to those who want him or her enough to sacrifice all else, to sacrifice all ego to this. So yes, this desire for awakening, this desire is the fire. Surrender all else to this, including trying to control your awakening. So yes, there's a discernment, but I'm also digging here to possible sense of control. Feel the desire. Feel it fully. Be in that desire completely for the awakening. And then how to get there? Surrender. As long as you are trying to control your destiny and your direction to awakening, it won't happen. So that control, surrender it to this desire too. Surrender it all.
So I'm going to play devil's advocate here a little bit.
Beautiful.
Where to start? I think it's very easy to say all is bliss or all is God or all is consciousness. And I would counter that by saying that our sense of separateness, our sense of being a self or an I, is as natural as a sense of oneness or not having an I. You know, you talked about Ramana and the Buddha. The Buddha didn't give up renunciation. He gave up extreme renunciation. But even after, you know, he became the Buddha, he lived a very disciplined ascetic life. You know, much more intensely disciplined than most of us would care to live. The same thing with Ramana. Ramana was part of a culture that made a place for someone who could be immersed in that oneness. You know, there was a point where Ramana was so immersed that ants were eating his legs when he woke up. And he had to come to some other, some more form, balanced form of existence also. You know, I would say I acknowledge the reality that we have a sense of separateness. And I also acknowledge the reality that a sense of non-separateness or oneness is possible. I no longer subscribe to what I would call the Advaitic narrative that said that sense of oneness is everything. I think it takes, in some sense, it takes a kind of violence against our natural sense of separateness,
yes,
to remain in that oneness.
Yes.
And I question whether that's a viable, ultimately a viable spiritual path. It may be for some, but for everyone. You know, and even in cultures where they acknowledge that, in a, say, a Theravadan Buddhist culture or a Zen Buddhist culture or the Hindu culture of Ramana, you know, there are a few people who sort of embody that oneness, and everybody else is just sort of living their separate lives, and they may receive some blessing from that, but it's not ultimately a viable way for most people to live.
Great. So what's here in the oneness, and what's here in the separation? What's here through both of them?
Without the interesting phenomenon of separation, I don't think we could have the experience of the more interesting phenomenon of sacred encounter. I think that the nature of encounter plays an important role here.
Absolutely.
In fact, I think sacred encounter fulfills the vision of the separation and the unity together.
So if you guys are familiar with Zen at all,
if you're having mystical union experiences and Shakti bliss, I'll go back and meditate some more. Mm-hmm. That's not it. So what's here? Both in those mystical sacred experiences and the experiences of separation.
I'd like to jump or take off from
sure.
Joseph.
Go right ahead. Mm-hmm.
Or sort of continue. And, mm-hmm. There was a period in my life where I was a chaplain at a prison for the criminally insane. Mm-hmm. Right? And I don't think they were awake. Mm. Not really or not essentially. And I don't think that if I had said that to them, I don't think that would have been helpful. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think that would have been something that would have nourished them or moved them even slightly in a direction. So when the mind is seething with the kinds of things that their minds were seething with, it's... to tell them that they are actually awake or essentially awake, I would, is not something that would nourish their soul, in my opinion.
So what in you discerns between whether awake or not awake? What in you is making this discernment or judgment?
I would say that someone who is awake would... manifests a certain compassion and love and, on an almost instinctual level. You know, like,
so we're reasoning here. And let me point you right back. Reasoning.
I didn't say reasoning.
No, I'm saying that we're reasoning here.
I'm just responding to your question.
Right. But who? What function over there is making this decision of awake or non-awake?
I don't view it as an either or. I would place the bar of awakening very, very, very high.
So, I hear you.
Feeling about that is that it doesn't happen even once in a generation. And so that's my, I have a mm-hmm. a high bar, but there's ways of approaching it. Mm-hmm. There's, less self-centeredness, more compassion, more love, and a generosity, kindness, all those kinds of virtues. And I also believe that renunciation is an essential aspect of an awake being. And by that I mean visible renunciation, not theoretical renunciation.
Absolutely.
But my point is that I think that human beings are essentially not awake. That the limitation of human beings, let's bracket my experience at the prison, mm-hmm. Just ordinary human beings are essentially limited. I become more impressed as my practice has matured with that human beings are essentially limited. So, and that I tend to now think that that's that limitation is their essential nature. Mm-hmm. And the ability to move into the unlimited comes as grace from the unlimited. Mm-hmm. It's a gift.
Right? Yeah.
And so I call this ultimate dualism.
Right.
So I'm just offering that observation. Okay.
Beautiful. Where there's an up, there's a down.
The gift, there's a reciprocation with the all, a reciprocation between your investment in the awakening and its investment in the, because it has an investment in your awakening. And
I wouldn't know.
Of course it does. That's well, I like the image of the lucid dreamer, that God dreamed the universe to awaken in it, as the lucid dreamer is human. So the vision of creation is our awakening. The awakening is who we are, and we're all ingredients in that. And the ingredients are kind of like toying with each other and trying to come into that relationship with each other, which produces the awakening, which is the primal vision. Kind of, yes.
Well, I would still say there's something here. Always. What is it that never changes, that's always here? There's in, there's out. There's dark, there's light. There's up, there's down. There's awake, there's non-awake. I use certain language, you know. So you can be a devil's advocate. That's mm-hmm. fine, because language is not my language. Isn't even total truth either. Mm-hmm. This is just the language that comes out of this one. So with any language, there's automatically its polarities, ups and downs, here and there. This moment, past, future, da-da-da-da-da-da. So then that's what the Buddha called being trapped in this wheel of samsara, this identification with all of this. There's oneness, there's division. But what's here, always, throughout all of it, know yourself as that. And you get to watch the rest of it. You're free of it. And you're free to be in it. You're free to live it. You're free to be in joy. You're free to be joyless. You're free to be in your shadow, too. You're free to act in ways, even, that may not be couched as enlightened or awake. Naropa was a very scholarly Buddhist. He finally saw his teacher Talopa, and Talopa was eating fish. What? He's supposed to be vegetarian. You're a Buddhist. Oh, okay. So Talopa brought the fish back to life. Fun little story. But. So on a certain level, I agree with you. There is a level of contract, and there's a level of openness. And all this is within consciousness. All this is the evolution of consciousness that happens in a fire of awakening. There is no end to this fire of awakening. It erases all of our fears, all of our hopes. It erases all that we are until we know clearly that which we are that never comes and goes. And then we can look back and go, oh, I was that even back there when I was kickboxing and wanting to kill something. I was still that. So there's something that was always here that never changed. It's always that awareness. Always, always, always. And yes, I do see this natural evolution from this contracted identity to a larger and larger embrace. This evolution of love, this evolution of God, of the I Am, whatever you want to call it, of compassion. So these are kind of two different, I don't want to say two different aspects, but there's the absolute kind of aspect,
And then there's this aspect that seems to move within time and space, that seems to evolve and seems to become, and it seems to change, and you get to see certain beings that are very highly, highly developed in this way. And that's the aspect that is within time and space. But this absolute aspect, always here, with everyone, absolutely everyone. And to recognize this is what can start the other. To recognize the absolute is what can start the evolution, that fire, whereby that recognition then permeates every aspect of who you are until it becomes visible. Appearances are just that. They're appearances. Don't be duped. What is that in which appearances exist or not exist? Ultimately, you can't think about it. It's just here. Here we are. And naturally, this fire of love seems to just come through. We don't have to do it. Although at first, sometimes there seems like a doing. There's this breaking of the habits. But that's also an appearance. Even the I am doing is an appearance.
It seems to me that the perhaps initially useful part of I am doing would be to cleanse the lens of perception, to allow some separation from all the daily distractions, from the habits that we've learned over our lifetimes, the expectations, the conditioned mind, and to break the pattern, allow an opening for a different vision to manifest. Put the clutter of all the stuff, the mental stuff, the physical stuff, all the stuff aside, to grasp an inkling of what is behind, the part that is here all the time, waiting for our notice. We can't recognize it unless it's already in us, I believe. So if we do see it, it's a reminder. And it's the seems to me that the function of practice is probably, this is my guess, to open the perception a little, to look deeper and recognize something that has been here all the time.
So if you feel the desire to take some space to be able to form this new perception, by all means, go for it. It's not everyone's path. Not everyone needs to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Awakening is pure grace. But what you feel in you, trust it. I mean, yeah, by all means, I needed to go off to Yosemite and spend a whole week out there. I did. But
sounds like that's what Anne had in mind. the freedom to just do nothing for a little while.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
That was just an example that came up when he asked the question.
Mm-hmm. So I acknowledge to trust your own heart. You know, trust yourself in this. Audio once said, you know, if somebody really believed that they could get enlightenment by running around the block, and he said, I would encourage them, like, yeah, run faster, that way. By all means, go for it. And who's to say that it won't work? But it's not a cause and effect. This doesn't work like cause and effect. What worked for me may not work for you. What worked for him may not work for her. It's pure grace. So we have to really just follow our own hearts when it comes to truth, ultimately. It doesn't matter what I say. It doesn't matter what anybody else says. This is the teacher. Sacrifice your mind to the heart. The Buddha was asked by his wife when he came back after his awakening, couldn't you have stayed at home and gotten your enlightenment thing? You know, and kept up your responsibilities to your family and your son and me? Yes, I could have. But I didn't know it then. Look at how various traditions have evolved. There might be the Himalayan yogis who never see another human face for the rest of their lives, meditate in caves for years and years and years. But then look at the tantric tradition in Kashmir. The Indian tantric tradition, they were householders. They discovered awakening right there in the midst of activities and turmoil. They applied mindfulness to each and every moment, using afflictions as the path. In other words, to deeply feel everything that arises in each moment, to be right here, totally mindful, totally attentive. Right mindfulness. Right thoughts and right view. Right view to understand what causes our suffering. Contraction, contraction. Me, 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 me. Four Noble Truths, all that great stuff. Right thoughts. Not to have opinionated, judgmental, blah, 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 blah. He sucks.
This sucks.
You know. Then we have the right speaking, right action, right livelihood. Right effort to understand what leads to a deeper resting in what we are right here, right now, which is the right mindfulness and the right meditation. Always mindful. I don't think Buddha prescribed like sitting there for 10 hours scanning your body. But he did talk about, he gave a sermon of mindfulness when you're walking, be mindful, I am here walking. When you're sitting, be mindful, I am here sitting. So I take it further. When you're feeling an uncomfortable feeling, I'm feeling this really uncomfortable feeling. And then beautiful Ramana, who's feeling this uncomfortable feeling? I am. Who am I? What is this I?
Who's noticing that you're having an uncomfortable feeling?
Yeah. I can't find the I. Or if you do find the self-centered motions within the mind, I like to say self-centeredness is not a bad thing. What happens when we have a pain in our body? Attention goes to that pain. Naturally. So when attention is on the self, self-centeredness, attention goes to where there's wounding. Attention goes to where there's separation. Attention dissolves with the right grace. No, I don't want to say right grace. All grace is right. With the right effort, which is grace.
With the healing? With the healing?
Healing. So we're talking about the appearances here and the fire of awakening, which actually is appearance, which...
Well, you were saying that the attention goes to the wounding.
Yes, 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 yes.
So then with the healing,
yes.
The attention is liberated?
When the distortion of self-attention isn't there, self-attention can be healing. When the distortion of self-attention is there, it is selfishness. It's a jumping into the mind. I need to pay attention to me, and then you look out at the world. How do I pay attention to me? Oh, I get money, I get sex, I get whatever, alcohol, blah, blah, blah. This is self-attention directed through mind. Self-attention, pure, is pure by itself. When it's not filtered through the distortion of mind, self-attention, yes, is healing. Who am I? Nisargadatta said, focus on the I am. He did that for 3 years. Self-attention. What am I? Self-inquiry. This is all self-attention. See through that, which has never been, and to actually see what always has been. This sight, this attention is necessary. This attention is intensified through your desire. If you desire truth, awakening, God, true nature, all of your attention and the Shakti of desire is all present right here. Right here, looking. Looking, 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 looking. Looking all the way to recognition.
What motivates you to come here and tell us this?
Originally, I moved here and 2 months ago, and something just felt like it's time.
Do you want to be a teacher of spiritual truth? Or?
Originally, yes. Now, no.
But that's what you're doing.
Am I?
What comes to mind is those that know don't say, and those that say don't know. Yeah. You sound like you know. But you're still saying it. I can't quite figure out why.
like Adia would say, my attempt is to fail well.
I'm not saying you're failing. I'm just wondering what motivates you. Are you trying to, you know, bring the world to enlightenment, save people's souls, you know, like the missionaries? I mean, what do you think motivates you? Instead of just concentrating on your own inner development, what do you think motivates you to try to bring that to those of us who want to come listen?
Right now, I would just say compassion.
Compassion.
I've discovered that which never suffers. I would love to point to that as much as I can.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else? Blessings to everybody.
Thank you.
Yeah. All views are welcome. Everything is welcome. Everyone is welcome. Here we are.
Thank you.